Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As more than half the state faces drought conditions, the impact reveals itself in often unexpected ways. We begin hour two of the program by welcoming South Dakota Secretary of Agriculture Mike Jaspers. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on.
We appreciate you being here. Can you give us an overview of what the situation is regarding the drought right now?
Well, just, you know, in general terms, it really started in South Dakota last year. And as our state climatologist, Laura Edwards, described to us on the governor's the state drought task force, is that, you know, we had a later fall and an earlier spring than is typical for South Dakota or than what is average. And by having a later fall and an earlier spring, we've been utilizing more moisture during those times that normally we don't in the state. And so that was one of the things that kind of helped exacerbate the situation and make the drought come on so much earlier than typically, you know, droughts are nothing new to South Dakota. We all know that. But to have it come on so severe so early in the season, that was one of the things. And, you know, that north central area of the state is this year the hardest hit and still is today. You know, thankfully, we've gotten some rains in a vast majority of the state to help a little bit. Some of those hardest hit areas have gotten some. Some areas have not gotten any. But it's kind of like if you get in a bicycle accident and you're laying in the street bleeding and somebody comes and puts pressure on and stops the bleeding, you know, you're not fixed and ready to jump back on your bike. You still lost a lot of blood and you still have some healing to do. And that's kind of the areas that even have gotten some rain, really the scenario that they're in.
Right. So what have you been hearing from farmers and producers across the state as far as what this looks like, you know, in their world? What are the practical implications of it?
Well, if for somebody that hasn't been there to kind of to visually put it, you know, a lot of the spring wheat that is planted, you know, in South Dakota, we plant both winter wheat and spring wheat. The winter wheat gets planted, obviously, in the fall. It goes through the winter dormant season, comes up. And that's typically the taller, more growth that, you know, takes off right away. It's already growing like your lawn would be in the spring. Those, we had good forage production. You know, it has to grow up in a vegetative forage state first and then turn the reproductive side. The areas that have been hit hard with the drought had the forage side, so it grew to some height. But when it came time to put the wheat kernels in the head, you know, it had run out of gas with moisture there. So a lot of those areas, a lot of that has gotten cut and baled for cattle feed or livestock feed. So that's the utilization there. So the second crop is the spring wheat crop that gets planted in the spring like anything else would be. And that, you know, it gets started later, and the drought was already pretty severe by the time those kernels got put in the ground and germinated. In a lot of areas, it reached less than 1 foot of height. The plant decided it was running out of water, so it tried to put a head on, turn to the reproductive stage early, and, you know, here again, no seed or very, very little, no good viable seed in the heads. And a lot of that is so short and so very little there that the producers, you know, didn't even have the options to either graze or hay those acres. A lot of those have just been killed back off. Some producers are trying to, you know, farmers and ranchers in South Dakota are the eternal optimists, and they're always, you know, we're going to get some rain sometime. Looking at, you know, we do have a lot of year left. Trying to not just give up and walk away in early or mid-June, but looking at alternative crops, putting hay crops like hay millet or forage sorghum or things like that, that they can put some other seed back in the ground. So if we do get some moisture, that they have, you know, the opportunity to grow something for feed and forage. So, you know, on the ground, that's, you know, with the crops, what we're looking at a lot. One thing to note as far as the U.S. wheat production, when it comes to spring wheat, I was recently at a conference that they said that almost 75% of the United States spring wheat production comes from North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. And if you think of where the drought is isolated to right now, that could have a big impact on the U.S. spring wheat production.
Okay, so roll that, spin that forward for me. What does that look like for the rest of the country? If that spring wheat production is down, how does that impact them?
Well, supply and demand thing. The wheat side, as far as pricing goes, really are in a world market. So the U.S. right. is, yes, definitely a player, but other areas of the world are as well. But if you take out, in essence, 75% of the U.S. spring wheat production, the U.S. spring wheat production, it's going to have some impact and effect. And it has, locally on prices already. I talked to a neighbor who has a little spring wheat in southeast South Dakota and said, boy, when spring wheat got to $5, he said, I can't let that go by. And he marketed some, and then he marketed a little more when it got a little over $6. And it's, so it has been increasing in price. But, just like in 2012, when much of the state, especially the southern two-thirds of the state was in severe drought, prices went to, corn went to $7 a bushel, but, none of us had any to sell. So,
right.
So that's the scenario. I think we will see an increase in wheat prices, as it reflects to the consumers. Is it going to have a major impact on the price of flour in stores and wheat-based products and stuff, or will the world supply kind of help balance that out? I'm not quite sure how that will be there, on that end of things. But
let's talk about the state's role, the emergency declaration. What sort of things happen at a state government level to provide assistance to farmers and producers in the state during a drought such as this one?
Sure. Well, the state's role in a lot of this and the drought scenario is really kind of a supportive and a connecting role. We all know South Dakota, from a fiscal standpoint, is very frugal, and as a state, we try not to tax our citizens any more than we need to. But the other side of that is we don't have a whole bunch of money sitting in different pots that we can turn around and dole back out for emergencies and things. When a drought hits like this year, the governor convened the state drought task force, which basically includes a vast majority of entities of state government that either are directly or can be directly or indirectly affected by drought conditions. Also, the state climatologists, our wildland fire climatologists, and others play very major roles in helping us monitor the situations and things. Then, we turn to look at, other things. Obviously, in South Dakota, very active in conservation programmings across our ag lands. Most notably the Conservation Reserve or the CRP program. Everybody knows it by that acronym and discussions about releasing those acres, for utilization of forage stocks, and our congressional delegations and the governor have all weighed in on that issue, as well as others have to Washington, D.C. But it's more of a, that's a federal issue, really, that the state can weigh in. We can help ground truth. We can help give information to those decision makers to help them make their decisions. And that's, we've played a role in that to help. And right now in the hardest hit areas that the CRP, certain CRP contracts in the county's hardest hit have been opened up for emergency grazing. One thing the governor did was, a week and a half ago or so, was to open up ditch hang earlier than the typical July 15th date. And part of that is the ditch mowing, the top edges are typically mown by the Department of Transportation to keep the, for safety reasons and things, but the rest of the ditch areas, they've been restricted for the first half of the summer season to get us through the wildlife hatching season, for our pheasants and other wildlife that sometimes utilize some of those areas for nesting. Here again, on a year like this, when we had such an early season that we talked about earlier, that also sped up our hatch a bit as well, too. And so looking at all things, was able to open up, a slight bit more of acres of hay available that can be utilized across the state by doing that. So there are a few small things that we can directly do on the state level, but a lot of it is just to help coordinate and share information and assist on things. Now, if the drought would continue on and get to be more severe as we get more into the typical prairie fire season that we normally start to see in July and August in South Dakota, and last year is as late as October when we had the large cottonwood fire out east of Wall. and other areas by having a drought declaration in the state. We can open up some resources as far when it comes to fighting fires, and that's one thing where the state can offer some financial assistance. And how that works in reality is, let's just say whether it's an individual has a fire or in a county, or somebody has to make the decision when there's a fire going that could potentially affect a lot of South Dakota, prairie acres and things. Somebody has to make the decision whether we can control this fire on our own or we need to call in backup for more resources, basically. And the challenge that always brings is if you call in extra resources, there's usually a cost to that. And right. You may get the fire out quicker, but now you have a big bill. You have, you're fighting this drought, whether you're the county or local people or a local individual making that call. You're short of financial resources anyway, and now you're going to incur more expense with a disaster. Well, by having the drought declaration, that opens up state resources where we can offer a substantial cost share to bringing in state resources, whether it's a state plane to help with the fire out or other resources that way to help minimize it. Then the scenario is, well, we can help put it out quicker so it affects less acres, or people say, well, if we deal with this on our own, it might get larger, but then we won't incur the cost. So the whole idea is to help minimize the ground print, footprint of the fire, get it to be contained quicker, and to do that so it isn't financially overwhelming for the local individual or agency that is having to make that decision. So that's one area where we can really offer assistance. Hopefully we don't get to that point this year in South Dakota that we can continue to see some thunderstorms pop up and we can get some rains to help soak down the state.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Mike Jaspers. He's South Dakota's Secretary of Agriculture. We're talking about the current drought conditions. More than 50% of the state is considered in a drought. An additional 32% abnormally dry conditions. Secretary Jaspers, for context, is this something that, you mentioned we're no stranger to drought? How does this year compare to other years in the recent past?
Well, it all depends on where you are. And where you're located, it's unique. Last year we had a drought that really came on. It was building, and then it got more severe in the summer. That last year's drought is more in the northwest. This one is somewhat more isolated, but it also takes in a huge portion of our state as well. There's a lot, quite a bit of the state, two-thirds of it that's kind of hanging on by a thread or less, if we get some rain, I can keep, hanging on for another week or another week and a half or something. So it's right now we're just kind of there. Now, if you're in an area that there were some areas that were very dry last year, that, it's back-to-back years, and that's the struggle. So it really varies, really where you're located within the state. Going back 5 years to the 2012 drought, other than the north, northeast, portion of the state that was able to be in a different weather pattern than the rest of us that year. We're not near as severe as 2012 was. Here again, a lot of what I personally experienced in that year was kind of some dry in 2011 going into 2012, where it didn't affect the growing season in 2011, but we were had less moisture that year, but we had enough in reserve that year to get through, and then that exacerbated 2012 that much earlier as well. So,
are there lessons?
It's kind of hard to compare, really, because everyone is unique and different, and affects everyone differently.
Are there lessons from 2012 that you find we're using today that we learned from some of those severe years?
Well, some things on a state level, you can. You can learn more on how to react, how things go. One lesson that I learned personally as an ag producer, as a row crop farmer and a cattleman and cattle grazer from 2012 is it really gave me a lot of confidence in what the ag industry is doing compared to 20 years ago, or pick a number in the past. But the advanced practices that we utilize now for land management, the technology we technologies we use in production agriculture, both in seed genetics, in placement of fertilizers and things, and just and how we operate our businesses. It was impressive because I looked at the rainfall that I received on my farm that year, and then I looked at the crop that I had. I mean, I didn't have much of anything, but even to have the forage production side of a corn crop that year to like harvest for feed for silage was unbelievable, knowing what that crop had been through. And so it gave me a lot of confidence in what we were doing as an agricultural industry, and we're tough people out here, and we use tough practices to help toughen ourselves up a little more every year. the challenge that we have this year, though, is comparing 2012 to 2017. And those that aren't directly involved in agriculture, this is one thing to keep in mind. In 2012, it was pretty much across the entire U.S., or the entire corn belt, soybean belt, for example. And because we all were way down in production, had devastating losses, you know, it affected the price, kind of like what we're seeing a little bit on the spring wheat side that we talked about earlier. And so the prices went up, so our insurance coverage and protection there assisted a lot more. Well, right now we're coming off of three back-to-back-to-back record-level production years in row crops in the U.S., which has increased supplies and decreased prices, supply and demand basics there. And so when we're in an isolated drought situation, it makes it so much tougher for those that are affected by it, because you don't have the price support to back you up. You know, you either need production or price or both. And if you have neither, you don't have the price to back you up, and you don't have the production. It just exacerbates the problem on an individual, on a micro level, so much worse. And especially for some of those areas in the North Central, some of those producers that are looking at this being the second consecutive year of challenges there, the financial challenges on an individual basis are sometimes quite severe and extreme. And it's not anything that producers were mismanaging or whatever. Right. A lot of folks have done a great job, but when Mother Nature just strikes against you, it's sometimes very, very challenging.
What's that feeling like then as a crop producer to look around and say, I haven't got a crop? What does that do? I hate to say it. What does it do to you emotionally? Yeah. But, what is that moment like for you?
Yeah, well, and it is. It is very, very devastating. And, there's a saying that as a producer, you only have, 30 or 40 years, you only get to produce, if you start, in your early 20s or roughly at 20 years old to 60 years old or so, you only get about 40 times to try to produce a crop. And, you look at that, that you lose 2.5% of your personal productivity every year. And, to lose that, on a 1 or 2 years of back to back. And it's tough. You incrementally can get ahead financially and build your business. And then when you do a huge, the old one step forward, two steps back kind of thing, it takes a long time to recover. And that can be very emotionally, struggling and trying on individuals. And, to those folks, I would just say, do what you can to reach out. Those of you that have, spouses, make sure you lean on each other or your neighbors, and talk through it and talk about it. And, I've had producers call me and just kind of talk through things, them knowing that I can't fix their problems, but just being someone that can understand. And that's what we need to do, is we need to lean on each other and help each other get through this and keep thinking of things. But it can be very, very emotionally challenging to individual producers.
Mike Jaspers is South Dakota's Secretary of Agriculture. Secretary Jaspers, come back anytime and talk with us. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.